Welcome to Hype, episode 194. My name is Selena, and I'm joined this week not by Pam, but by Danya. Hi, Danya. Welcome back.
It's good to be. It's been a very, very long time.
It has been a long time. I was saying before the show that I always like mean to invite people on, and I'm like, yeah, come back anytime. And then like 6 years pass, and I'm like,
it's been 84 years.
But here you are. We're so glad to have you on this week, filling in for Pam for the whole show. But obviously, you are here not just for one reason, but you're primarily here now to talk about Voltron, which is huge and it's exciting and people are super hyped for it. And we had some requests to talk about it, so we thought we'd bring in the expert.
Woo! I'm glad to be like considered an expert now for something that I'm like, I used to watch that show when I was a kid, like the original 80s version of it, and then they remade it, and I was like, ooh. But when they were remaking it, I was like, ooh, they're remaking it with like some of the crew that worked on Avatar, even better. Mm-hmm. And then just like fell into this pit of being like, so this is my life now. Everything about this show has just taken over my life. I love it.
Yes, that's amazing. And I can't wait to hear all about that and like why you are like the name in Voltron. It's a very exciting story. But before we do that, as always, just reminding everyone of the contact information. If you guys have any comments on this week's show, or if you have any suggestions for us or feedback or anything like that, you can do that by emailing us hype@hypeable.com. You can also tweet us at hypeablehype. And of course, you can visit us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. All right, so without further ado, let us head into How We Hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. And I made Danya pick something besides Voltron for this one, just so you all know.
Yeah, because, I mean, this week has largely been Voltron-related, but there have been other things going on in my life, I promise.
Like what?
So, for anyone who may be familiar with me, you may also know that I am a huge fan of ice hockey. Which has spanned about 10 years or so of my life, but kind of recently kicked into high gear when I started, like, finding other people into it. And so I started making friends with people who, like, wrote about the team that I liked, who are the Washington Capitals. And yeah, so they ended up winning, like, the biggest trophy that you could possibly get as an ice hockey team, called the Stanley Cup. They've never won it in their entire history. They are renowned for crashing out in the second round every single year, particularly against their biggest rivals, the Pittsburgh Penguins. And no one ever thought that they would win, because their team this year was, on paper, the weakest that it has been in about 5 or 6 years. So no one had any expectations. And then they went on and won the whole thing. It was just like,
wow,
one thing after the other, and it just kept being like, but are they actually going to do it? Are they really going to do it? And this week, so on the 31st of July, a special kind of like DVD, Blu-ray combo pack and digital edition of like the journey of how they got there came out. So basically it was reliving like the tail end of like the off season last year and everything that happened, the entire regular season over the last year, then their Stanley Cup run, because they lost a lot of, like, major players last year because contracts had expired. They'd never got past the second round, so a load of players decided to move on to teams where they felt that they had a better chance to win the cup. And I feel like, in a lot of ways, that ended up making them a closer team, where they kind of had to rely on each other a lot more because they didn't have these big players anymore. But yeah, it was just, it's been incredibly emotional reliving that, because doing it in real time is is super emotional and it's still kind of really overwhelming. But going back and just reminding yourself of, like, how it actually happened is crazy. So that's been, like, one of the major things I've been really enjoying this week, other than Voltron.
Oh, cool. Yes, there's a world outside of fandom, and that world is full of other fandoms.
Yeah.
Like we were just talking about. That's awesome. I'm staying a little closer to home, and literally Danya's home. I'm talking about a book that I haven't finished reading, but I started reading it on Pam's recommendation, I believe on the show, and I didn't really have anything this week that isn't an NDA, I guess. So I will talk about The Royal We, which, I mean, I'm sure you guys know it. It's a huge classic. It's basically like the William and Kate story, even though I suppose now it's more like a Harry and Meghan story. In a way, it's this the Prince of England, of Britain, of Wales, actually. I should get that right. Marries or falls in love with an American exchange student, and it sort of chronicles their journey, you know, to marriage. And it really sort of lets you into the way the tabloids work and all of that. It's very scandalous. It's such a summer book, and I really desperately needed something that wasn't fantasy or sci-fi or horror or like whatever the hell else is my brand. So I have been really, really, really enjoying reading snippets of this book on my balcony. What is like a funny, besides from just that fact that the book is very enjoyable, is that I started out, actually the real secret reason that I wanted to read this was because I had a suspicion that is wrong, that this was in fact the student prince made into a book. Which, if you guys know The Student Prince, we talk about it all the time. It's, of course, like the very famous Merlin and Arthur fanfic that we are obsessed with on the show. And I believe Danya is also familiar with it. So
yes.
Right?
Yes. Just a little bit.
Which is still better than this book. I'm sorry. It's a really good fanfic. But like as I'm reading this, it's so funny because I don't know if you know this about me, Danya, but I have this tendency whenever I read something, I always assume that it's an adapted fanfic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that so many books are secretly adapted fanfics, and for some reason I cannot read a book without trying to figure out what fandom it's from. So like I have like, you know, like for example, The Raven Cycle, I'm like, yeah, that's The Marauders, like for sure, like whatever the author says, I don't care, it's definitely The Marauders. And so for The Royal We, actually, like what I was reading it, I'm now convinced that this is a Harry and Ginny fanfic. Like I've mapped all the characters, how it works, like all the friends. It's always the trick is whenever like the lead couple has like a vague group of friends of like 3 or 4 or 5 people, and they like don't like their personalities are kind of stock personalities, you know what I mean? Like it's kind of like a weird little amalgamous group, and they all fit together and they all end up being paired off. I'm always like, yep, it's a fanfic, it's a cafe AU, coffee AU, whatever it's
coffee
called.
Coffee shop AU.
Coffee shop AU, yeah. So that is now my official theory, is that The Royal We is a Harry and Ginny fanfic.
Okay, I'm going on an actual honest to goodness holiday at the end of this month.
Sounds
yes.
Nice.
For the first time in a decade, I'm actually taking a summer holiday. Mm-hmm. And I need a book to read.
Yes. Well, it's a very good summer book.
Yeah.
Although if you want something that's like actually amazing, I should also say that I think I might have wrecked this on the show before. Otherwise, I will do like a proper recommendation of it at some point. It's called Year One. It's by Nora Roberts, who's like a really big romance author, like massive romance author. She's written like hundreds of books, but this is actually not a romance. This is like a post-apocalyptic book. Like the world ends in the book, and then you follow like the humans that survive. It's a little bit like The Last of Us, the video game, but a book. And it's amazing. I read it like a couple of months ago. It was recommended to me actually by the Hunter writer, funnily enough, who was like, you would like this. And she was right. So yeah, if you want an actually good book, I would recommend that one.
Okay. An actually good
book. Not to shade The Royal We, but I mean, it's no The Student Prince.
Which is very, very good.
It's very, very good.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes. So those were our How We Hypes. And moving on to the news now, we're starting at the top of the world. And the duck, it's you.
Yeah, so I guess the biggest thing with this news, which is basically that Star Wars Episode 9 has announced the cast that are going to be in the film, was that there was this huge question mark about what they were going to do with Carrie Fisher. Obviously, mm-hmm. she passed away really tragically, and the original plan for Episode 9 was always going to be that where, like, The Force Awakens was largely focusing on Han out of the trio, and The Last Jedi focused on Luke. Episode 9 was always going to be, like, Leia's movie, where they would spend the most time with her. Obviously, after Carrie Fisher's passing, plans had to change, so it was really up in the air what was going on. The biggest thing out of this news is that they will be featuring Carrie Fisher in Episode 9 using footage that was shot for The Force Awakens but never used. So they're going to reincorporate some of that, which was done with the permission of Carrie Fisher's brother and also her daughter, Billy Lord. Mm-hmm. So basically Carrie Fisher's estate signed off this as basically being okay to do. They were like, yes, no, we're happy with this, that's fine. And then, obviously, the other really interesting return is Mark Hamill is back as well. And Billy Dee Williams will be making his first appearance in this, and he played Lando in the original trilogy, so he's coming back. So there are a couple of surprises there, other than, like, you know, Daisy Ridley, Adam Driver's back, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Donald Gleason, Kelly Marie Tran, you know, so the usual suspects of, like, who we would think would be back in Episode 9 will be back, with a couple of extras. Mm-hmm. And two new cast members, Naomi Ackie and Richard E. Grant, are joining the cast. But yeah, I think the biggest thing that came out of this was them bringing back Carrie Fisher through archive footage, essentially.
Yes, I think there's a lot of interesting things. I was saying, on, like, we've talked obviously a lot about this on Hype as it's progressed, and we've talked about, you know, the absolutely tragic, horrible, sickly symbolic thing of them promising Carrie that the ninth one would be her film. You know, yeah. Like, Han got the first one, Luke got the second one. She was, like, she was last, and it was too late. You know, like, that in itself is just heartbreaking. Yeah. So I'm happy that they'll bring her back in some way. I'm ready to sort of suspend my disbelief. I'm sure it's going to be creepy as hell, but, like, it's okay. Like, I hope that they do change some stuff, because I don't see how they could do so much as I think they were originally going to do. But, like, my hope is just that they actually managed to do something. And then, like I've been saying, I hope that they give some of her stuff to Lando, you know? Like, I think that would be sort of a perfect alternative to, because that's also, again, speaking of representation, you know, to that Lando sort of gets his time to shine as the unofficial fourth member of the main, like, they always talk about the trio of the original Star Wars film, but really it should be, like, the quartet, right? So I think that would be really wonderful if they gave him some media material that might have had the effect that Leia's would have had, and I hope that they find a way to honor her. And I have to say I really trust J.J. Abrams with this, just because I love The Force Awakens so much. Like, I really just, that movie just did so much good for me. You know what I mean? So yeah. I'm really, really, like, I have so much faith in him.
Yeah, I mean, like, my feeling is that The Force Awakens kind of reinvigorated that feeling that I had when I saw the original Star Wars. It was that sense of wonder, that kind of, like, it felt magical. Mm-hmm. And The Last Jedi evoked, like, the same feeling that I got when I saw The Empire Strikes Back, where it did something a little darker, a little more unexpected. It took the story in a direction that I wasn't expecting and was a little different and kind of, like, stepped away from that, like, first introductory movie a little bit. And so I think the way that this new trilogy has gone is, like, following a lot in the footsteps of the original trilogy in spirit more than, like, being a carbon copy, which I think is really exciting, because The Last Jedi set up some, like, really interesting stuff that they can capitalize on in the final movie, and it'll be really interesting then to see what J.J. Abrams does with that, because he's a very different director to Rian Johnson. So I'm really excited to see what he does coming back now that, like, he's had his film that set it up. Rian basically was like, cool, I'm gonna throw, like, these spanners into the works and just, like shake things up and kind of see where everything falls out. And now J.J. Abrams is picking that all back up again and finishing the story, and I love that idea, because I think he'll probably do it really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Moving on to, like, from... we're tackling the giants this week, from Star Wars to Lord of the Rings. There's some interesting news about the TV series that's going ahead over on Amazon. I would say a bit of a mixed bag on this one. The good news, I guess, is that we have a couple of showrunners on the team now, which is exciting because it means that the Lord of the Rings show is one step closer to happening. What is not maybe as exciting, and which feels unfair because we literally have no way to judge these people, is that we have no way to judge these people because they haven't done anything before. So their names are buried in the story, even your story. Do you know them off the top of the head? It's
J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay.
J.D. Payne, yes. J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay are the names of the people that are developing this Lord of the Rings story. And they come out of the world of Star Trek. They were uncredited writers on one of the movies, which is interesting, Star Trek Beyond. And they are, like, a proper writing team. They've been writing together for more than 2 decades. They've done, like, other stuff, obviously, in the past. So I think the interesting part of this, obviously, is that they're giving this huge franchise to someone fairly unknown. Like, I'm not sure that anyone was really expecting that this project was going to go to someone who didn't at least have, like, a couple of series under the belt. I think that people are sort of commenting on how weird it is that, especially being a little bit salty about how, you know, there's always so much talk about how women can never sort of get a foot up or a leg up because, ooh, they're not experienced enough for XYZ thing, and they go and give Lord of the Rings to a couple of guys you've never heard of. And then obviously, like, there is the factor of the fact that there are a couple of white dudes that get to run this world where it doesn't rule out diversity in front of the screen. But it would have been really good news. You know, like, look at the Buffy news. Like, I feel like the saving grace of the Buffy news was that it's being developed and possibly showrun by a black woman, you know? And it's going to have, obviously, a black female character. But it's almost more exciting than the showrunner is, in fact, someone who, incidentally, has worked her way up through TV and has some absolutely fantastic credits to her name. You wrote this story up. I'm sure you have a lot of feelings about it.
Yeah, I mean, when I picked this up, I was trying to, like, tell the news quite straight without injecting too much opinion into it, but, like, as
which
I was
did very well.
Yeah, because as I was digging, I was like, these guys have, like, got nothing. Like, there's literally nothing. I was, like, digging around, like, IMDb profiles. I was Googling them. I was like, what have they done? And, like, as I was digging and going further and further, I was like, oh, they have an uncredited writer, like, thing on Star Trek Beyond. Which, hands up, I absolutely loved Star Trek Beyond. I thought it was a great movie, but uncredited writers, typically they're uncredited because they didn't do a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to contribute a certain amount to the final script that is on screen in order to earn a credit. And similarly, I think only two writers can get full credit, mm-hmm. as far as I'm aware. So the fact that neither of them got a credit makes me go, well, I don't actually know how much they contributed to the final version that we even are aware of. So digging in further, like, they have returned and they are working on the Star Trek movie that's in development right now as well. Mm-hmm. But similarly, they don't have a credit right now on that. So I feel the same. It's like, we have so many people who've, like, had to claw and fight and, like, drag their way up to get onto any kind of show, to get any kind of look in, and they're still told that they haven't done enough.
Yeah.
And then these guys kind of walk straight into what is probably one of the biggest and most hotly anticipated fantasy shows that's going to be upcoming, because you gotta think, Game of Thrones is gonna leave a huge void when it goes off the screens next year. And this Lord of the Rings series is essentially going to step right into that, because when Game of Thrones ends in 2019, I think the plan for the Lord of the Rings series is that it's going to come out sometime around 2020. So they're basically going to do a big swap. Game of Thrones goes away, Lord of the Rings comes in. That is a huge, huge platform for any writer, any showrunner, anyone working on that show, and we don't know what these guys are capable of because they're completely unproven, untested. And in one way, like, I like the idea that they're basically taking a shot on people that maybe they've seen something and they've gone, actually, these guys have some great ideas. We think that, you know, they're going to do something really fantastic with this show. But it's that double standard of, like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
What makes it okay to take a chance on these guys, but not on anyone else ever?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's exactly it. Like, I feel exactly the same. Like, you, it's great. It's awesome that they must have come in and blown these executives out of the water. Otherwise, how would they ever have gotten this job? You know, they must have a vision of a Lord of the Rings TV series that they love, you know, which is great. And I hope it is good. You know, that's not always a guarantee that an executive loves it, that the audience is going to love it. But I am willing to like it. It's just like you said, it is incredibly frustrating because it's so indicative of, like, the problems that the entertainment industry faces. I think there was, like, a recent report that despite of all the progress, it seems the industry is making, there have not in fact been significant improvements, you know, in terms of representation of non-white male people in Hollywood. And so this is just proof of how and why that happens. And it is frustrating. But I think, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but I feel like, you know, you can acknowledge the frustration and still be like, but that doesn't mean the show is going to be bad. It doesn't mean I'm not going to watch it. It doesn't mean I'm not going to give it a chance. It's just disappointing.
Yeah. I think it's disappointing is the word for it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yes. Because disappointed, but not surprised.
Yeah. Full on colorful 80s meme.
Exactly.
Kind of moving on slightly. Another huge fantasy show that's in production is the adaptation of His Dark Materials, mm-hmm. which is going to be coming to the BBC. And there have been a lot of casting rumors and not a lot of, like, concrete, like, confirmation about who is actually going to be starring in this show and what's going on. Like, I think the only thing that we really knew with any certainty was Jack Thorne, who wrote Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. Do with that information what you will. Is going to be in charge of the show. But all of the casting was kind of up in the air and like, oh, we've heard that it is these people, but nothing was like, yes, it is officially these guys from the BBC themselves. And now they've released the entire cast list. So the rumored ones were obviously Daphne Keane as Lyra. That's now confirmed. James McAvoy, yay, as Lord Asriel, also confirmed.
Yay!
And Lin-Manuel Miranda as Lee Scoresby was also rumored, and that is now confirmed as well. Those were the three that, like, everyone was talking as if it was all but official. It's now official. And that alone, for me, is basically enough of a cast to, like, get really excited about.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you've got Clark Peters is going to be playing the Master. You got Ruth Wilson is going to be Mrs. Coulter.
Yes, that's a really good one.
That's a really good casting choice, I think. I think she's going to be incredible. Anne-Marie Duff is going to be Mark Costa, which I think also a really great choice. But, like, you're talking, it's a huge list here. Were there any others on this list that stand out to you? I'm just looking at, like, fan favorites in terms of characters.
Right. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda is, like, the standout. But actually, you know what I found pretty interesting, and I guess I shouldn't have been surprised by this, but Penzelaimon, her demon, is played by Archie Barnes, who is a small child.
Yeah.
He's like 8 or 9 or something like that. Like, I think I don't really remember, but that's interesting because I don't know why in my head the voice was like an adult male voice speaking to Lyra. And I guess that wouldn't really make sense that it should be a child because she's a child. But
yeah,
so that kind of like caught me weirdly off guard, even though it probably shouldn't have.
Yeah. I think I'd always assumed that it was like a child to me, but like, yeah, that's, yeah, I guess because everyone imagines things a little differently.
Yeah, yeah. So that was just like, oh, right. Yes, it is a child demon. Obviously. But no, I think this is so great. I think that Daphne Keane as Lyra is just like, she is lifted straight out of the pages of the book. I cannot believe, like, not just her looks and her personality in Logan, obviously, and just the way she is. Like, that is beyond perfect. And James McAvoy, I think I've said this on Twitter before, how like it's really hard for me to keep James McAvoy and Jude Law separate in my head. So I find it really funny that they're both like, you know, one is Dumbledore and one is Lord Asriel, and now I'm like even more confused. I think that he is great. And then Manuel Miranda is obviously still, I cannot believe they got him. Like, I can, but I also can't. I'm so
excited. Lin-Manuel Miranda is, you kind of look at his schedule of everything he's doing and I just kind of go, I know I overwork myself, but man, please make sure that you're sleeping. He's so busy. Oh,
he is. He's like in a new city every time he tweets. It's insane. I love it. I think my mother told me, I don't know if this is true, if this lines up with the actual scheduling, but she said she was in Oxford recently and she saw them filming there, which is really cool.
That would probably make a lot of sense. I think a lot of production, because production is underway, like it's happening right now, but I think some of it, it's going to be similar to how Merlin did it, where they will have some things that need to very iconically be where it's set. Mm-hmm. So where Merlin spent like some time in France, but the rest of it was filmed in Wales. Similarly, I think the way that they're going to go with this show is the same. Some things are going to have to happen in Oxford because trying to create a fake Oxford is going to be really difficult.
When you have the real Oxford right there.
Like, right there, because it's so... Oxford is really iconic, and it's very, very difficult to recreate because the streets are really... It's just really oddly laid out. And weird, and just the way that you move around it is very unique to Oxford. So it makes a lot of sense that they'll do a lot of filming there, and then when it moves outside of Oxford as a location, they'll probably move back to Wales because Bad Wolf are managing it, who are a Welsh production company.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a lot of sense that that's going to happen. We also got a couple of the directors for the episodes as well, which is really interesting because Tom Hooper, who did The King's Speech and Les Misérables, is doing episodes 1 and 2.
Cool.
And Otto Bathurst, who was a director on Peaky Blinders, is doing episodes 4 and 5. Dawn Shadforth is the director of episode 3, but I'm not sure what they've done before. But yeah, so we've got the directors as well for episodes 1 through 5, which is really cool. And I like that they're giving them, for the most part, like, 2 episodes.
Yeah.
Like, yes. One after the other, so they at least get to, like, follow through maybe some of the things that, like, they've set out. They're like, they can capitalize on it a little later then.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm excited. We also have some interesting news. This is a really good news for TV stuff. We've talked previously about Timeless being one of the canceled shows that likely was not going to be able to score a renewal for a second time, which has been kind of ironic since I think, this is my theory, that Timeless's renewal last season was kind of what helped some of the saved shows this year, you know, pick up steam at other networks. However, even though it's not getting a season 3, they have somehow, possibly with the help of Leslie Jones threatening some people, managed to score a finale movie, which is great. And that's also obviously what happened with Sense8. And I'm so happy. I know the Timeless fans have been fighting so hard for this. And I think the show, you know, my brother's a huge fan of it as well. I think there was a lot of scope for it to continue. I'm really sad it's not getting a season 3, but I am just really, really happy because that final shot of the season 2 finale, it felt like it was opening up a whole new show. And it's upsetting that it's not, but it could very well be a self-contained story. I think, you know, if you haven't seen it yet, spoiler alert, it was like months ago, but it's sort of coming back from the future and going to save Rufus and all that is like, okay, that is your story. You have to go and save Rufus. That's literally the plot of your movie. And once you've done that, then the story can end. And that is great. So NBC and Sony have announced this, the joint announcement. And the two executive producers, Sean Ryan and Eric Kripke, released a statement where they say, while we wish we could have made another dozen seasons of Timeless, this is the next best thing. We're thrilled to take the lifeboat out for one last spin and bring closure to our story. The studio, network, cast and crew are all doing this for one reason only, the fans. Because they deserve it. Because the fans made this happen and we thank them for their passion, support and helicopters. So you guys want to get Rufus back or what? It's so cool. I love this. I love how much fandom is beginning to matter to networks and to creative teams. And I love the trend of it's really hard now to cancel a show cold turkey. You know, there's such a growing trend of giving shows like wrap-up seasons or, like in this case, a wrap-up movie or wrap-up episode. Like they want stories to end properly because the fans want it. And I think that is really great.
I think it's like a shifting landscape because it's very, very quickly moving away from a traditional TV landscape where you should expect that everyone is watching it live. And there's still such a huge focus on that because they're obviously a large part of what happens is through selling advertising and advertising slots on your show. And obviously the more eyes on it and the more eyes on the advertising, the better it is. And it kind of all feeds into each other. But because people are busy, because we don't all lead traditional lives, there are so many ways in which to watch a show on your own terms. It's far more difficult now to kind of quantify exactly how people are watching things. So it's really hard to judge how big your fandom is because there's no way to really get those raw numbers in the way that you used to be able to. And so that landscape means that you may cancel a show, but it may actually be more popular than you think it is, or than the network thinks it is, I should say. A lot of, like, the showrunners or people working on the show tend to be, like, fairly confident in like how well their show is doing amongst fans because they're interacting so much through social media now. But networks, it's really hard for them to get a handle on exactly how big a show is or how well it's doing because there's no real strict viewing habits anymore. So when there's this huge outcry, I think a lot of the time it will actually take them by surprise to be like, oh, I don't think we actually realized that the show was this popular. So actually being able to get a wrap up and to be able to tell a fitting end to a story, I think that a lot of the time that's all that you really want.
Yes.
And sometimes a show isn't going to go on as long as Supernatural has, for example, because...
That's unlikely.
Yeah, and to be honest, I don't want that to happen to most of the shows I'm watching. I do like it when shows have, like, a concrete idea of what their starting point is and what their end point is, and things may change in the journey to get to those points or get between those points, but like having a finite amount of episodes and be like, okay, this is the story that we want to tell, let's tell it. I like that idea rather than like this never-ending kind of like story that, you know, you kind of like drop out of because it's not as strong as it always was, which with Supernatural, like judging by the fandom, that's not the case because the fandom is probably about as strong as it's ever been. But just in general, for me, I prefer it when a story like comes to an end on its own terms rather than like trying to force like continuing when they don't really have the full story to tell. But I'm really glad for Timeless fans because I know that it ended in a really weird place that it doesn't really make sense to not continue it
right,
on in some way.
That would be a terrible cliffhanger.
Yeah.
To end
well, similarly,
on.
Something happened with Lucifer. Like, Lucifer ended in a place where it was like, I can't believe we're not getting any more after that. And then it was renewed. It was picked up.
Yeah.
Elsewhere. So I'm just really glad that there are other places that then see that potential and are like, okay, that still has a lot of space to go in telling its story. So I just really like this a lot.
I really do too. And like not to spend too much time on it, but you also made me think with what you said that about how habits of watching are changing. I'm also wondering if there is an element of studios maybe thinking a little bit more ahead, like not in terms of, because usually it used to be like syndication, like if your show makes it to syndication, then you're set for life.
Yeah.
But I think if they're thinking ahead to shows being binged in the future, to being like cult faves, to being really popular sort of down the line, then I think they must also be thinking, well, if a show doesn't have an ending, you know, it's much less likely that it's going to be popular to binge because people are going to be like, well, I'm not going to watch this. Like, I remember that was the case for a Deadwood, which, by the way, also is getting a movie.
Yeah.
So speaking of movies, but like that was the case for Deadwood. Everyone was saying like it's the best show ever made, but you shouldn't watch it because it doesn't have an ending. And
yeah.
I think, I mean, I obviously word of mouth is limited. Like if a series is good, I feel like people would still watch it. But I do think there is some point to be made, I think, about the fact that TV series are not just they air when they air and then if they don't go into syndication, then that's it for them. They have a much longer shelf life and they're built, like even TV shows are being made to be binged now, you know, they're being made to watch in their entirety. And so I think that must be something they're beginning to think about as well.
Yeah. Which is actually the case with what's happening with Voltron.
Well, there you go. Perfect transition.
So it was announced at San Diego Comic-Con that Voltron will come to an end by the end of 2018. So they had a specific episode order. I think it was like 76 episodes. That was basically Netflix and DreamWorks were like 76 episodes. That's what you've got to tell your story. Because they kind of had pitched it and were like, this is the story we want to tell. This is like the starting point. This is kind of where we want to end. So they were given an episode order to hit that. Mm-hmm. And the seasons have come out quite rapid fire because they released them in bursts of 7 episodes in quick succession. So you got less episodes, but more frequently. But at San Diego Comic-Con, they announced that Season 7 will be released on August 10th. And that'll be jumping back up to 13 episodes. And they will... Season 8, which will also be 13 episodes, which will be the last 13 episodes of the show, will happen before the end of this year. And I kind of am not disappointed about that, because I got a sense in Season 6, which had just finished airing back in June, that this story was starting to wrap up. That they were starting to come towards a natural conclusion to this show. And I feel like this was always the way that they wanted to go. So knowing that set in their minds that this is the story that they wanted to tell, that is actually really comforting to me. That they're not going to continue to try and make it work long beyond, like, the solid story idea that they've got. So we get a really satisfying ending.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to make it easier then, obviously, to go back and rewatch. But, yeah, so we got that. So I'm feeling a little weird about it in that I'm kind of glad that they're ending it on their own terms, because this was always the amount of episodes that they had. So it's not cancelled. This show is, like, insanely popular. They probably could continue on much, much longer than just the original episode order that they had, but they still want to end it here because that's how they want to end the show. And yes. I like that, but also the other part of me is like, I don't want it to end. It's so good, and it's the story it's telling is incredible, and I feel like so conflicted about it. But mm-hmm. yeah, so it's coming to an end this year completely.
Wow. That's so sad. But what a good year. Like, what a good year to get into the fandom. I really want, like, some insight into, like, how you got, like, why you're in the fandom so much and everything that happened at Comic-Con and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, with how I started with the show, I really loved the 80s show when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of, like, picked up on it when they were, like, remaking it. And was like, ooh, interesting. I really liked this show when I was younger. And then when I dug into it a little bit more, found out that some of the staff that was basically going to be showrunning it had come from Avatar The Last Airbender and Legend of Korra. So already there was that built-in idea in my mind that I already trusted them to tell a really great story, because the basis that they were coming from was already two shows that I feel told very different stories, but both very good in their own way. So I was really excited to, like, follow them into that, because it was the first major... They were the first creatives to do, like, a major project post-Avatar and Korra.
Mm-hmm.
And it was based on something that I had enjoyed as a kid and had a lot of potential to be remade. I didn't actually get to see season one until, like, maybe a month after it had released, because I was traveling. And so when I finally sat down and watched it, like, I thought, oh, I'll, like, space it out and watch it over, like, a certain amount of time. No, I watched the first episode and then, like, didn't stop watching until I'd finished the first season, because it got me hooked straight away. And then, obviously, like, almost immediately after that, I went to Andrew, who runs Hypeable. He's our editor-in-chief. And I went, hi, Andrew. And he's like, hi, Danya. I'm like, I'm covering Voltron now.
Taking my approach to negotiating with Andrew, I see.
Yeah. Basically was like, hi, I'm covering this show now. And he was like, yeah, sure, whatever. And it just kind of spiraled from there. I kind of got talking to, like, people in the fandom and just interacting with people. I started interacting with, like, a couple of people on the voice cast and a couple of people, particularly Lauren Montgomery and Joaquim Dos Santos, who run the show. I've had unprecedented access to them in order to interview them after every single season of the show, which has been incredible because I love this show a lot. It tells a story, and if you really want to, like, it's got a lot to it. And just being able to, like, break it down with them, like, finding out why they've made some of the decisions that they did, why they went in certain directions, like, picking up on, like, really tiny details and asking them to elaborate on it. Like, being able to do that has been incredible for me, and it's kind of very different because you'll find it, whatever show you sort of cover, you'll tend to have, like, the stock questions that kind of get asked over and over and over again, and I kind of threw that book out, and I was like, no, I'm a fan of this show. I'm going to ask them all the time what I want to know as a fan.
Yeah.
Because if I want to know it, there sure as hell are, like, countless other people out there watching the show that also want to know these things. And it started to gain traction in, like, a really crazy way, and blew up especially around the end of season 4, moving into, like, 5 and 6. People really started picking up more and more on the stuff I was saying, and sharing it, and, like, passing it around, and Lauren and Joaquin were, like, sharing what I was saying more, and it basically got crazy, but it especially got more nuts this San Diego Comic-Con. So I already had a lot of eyes on the stuff that I was writing. And at San Diego Comic-Con, they basically confirmed that one of the lead characters, Shiro, is queer. Now, they haven't confirmed how he identifies. They have called him gay in a couple of, like, interviews, but I think they've used it more as an umbrella term rather than being, like, concrete, like, he's only attracted to men. They've said in other interviews that they wanted to leave it up to people's interpretation of how he might identify, but the important part is that prior to, like, the start of the show, he was in a relationship with another man. They eventually broke up, but that is something that was part of his life. And they were together a very, very, very long time. And the other thing that they also revealed at the same time is that Shiro had a degenerative muscle condition that would eventually mean that he would no longer be able to pursue space travel, which was his dream. And the thing that he wanted to do, the breakdown of his relationship, essentially came in that he chose to go on a mission knowing that he was sick, and that was, like, a breaking point for his boyfriend. And they broke up because he was like, I'm not gonna be here waiting for you to come back. Like, I can't do this anymore, kind of thing. So both of those things in that intersection, like, really hit me as someone who also identifies as queer and also has a really debilitating chronic illness that sometimes leaves me in crippling pain where I can't stand, I find it really difficult to breathe, I, like, cry, I throw up, it's awful. It just kind of hit me because I'd always identified with that character anyway, and I'd never been able to really pinpoint exactly why. And this just kind of brought it all crashing down to me. And in the wake of San Diego Comic-Con, I just put it all down as much as I possibly could. Like, I told my story, and then I brought in, like, how much it meant to me that it was Shiro, that this show that already meant so much to me, this character that I'd never really quite known why I'd gravitated to him, also then ended up meaning so much more to me because, wow, what an amazing character who perseveres through so much adversity, also has these other identifiable parts to him that kind of echoed within me. And that piece, the response that I got to it, is still one of the most overwhelming things that has possibly happened to me in the entire time that I've written for Hyperbole, and I've been there almost 5 years. And I'm still getting messages from people and people reaching out and talking to me, like, from the show, from the fandom, from people even outside of the fandom who read the piece, who saw the news but don't watch the show, have read it and basically have, like, reached out and said, like, they're gonna be watching the show now because of, like, what I wrote. And every now and then, like, I remember the response to it and I've, like, been crying because I'm like, it's just, it's a lot. It's very overwhelming, but in the best possible way. And it kind of, like, a lot more people have ended up interacting with me. And it's been great because this fandom, while it does have aspects of it that get a little rocky, to put it politely, in the way that fandoms in certain corners get, you know, you have a lot of varying ages and emotions running very, very high that lead to a lot of behaviors that you don't necessarily condone. There have been death threats against voice actors in this fandom that I very, very strongly disagreed with, I should say. But this fandom also does a lot of good. There are a lot of great people in it, and there are a lot of wonderful, wonderful people involved in the show. And it just brought me closer to them. And I think a lot of it was them being honest with me and me being honest with them that kind of, like, has just, it's almost like this wave has kind of come over and I'm, like, getting swept up in it. And it's crazy, but in the best possible way. And while I'm really sad that the show is coming to an end, I'm like, you know what? It's still really great because yeah. This show has still brought us all together. I don't plan on letting any of them go. I'm planning on, like, still talking about this show right through to the final episode, but it's been this really weird, crazy journey that I've been on with this show that has been unlike anything else I've covered on Hyperbole in the best way. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really, I'm really glad that I've had it and really glad that I've had this experience because it's just been incredible every yeah. step of the way.
That's awesome. I have a little bit of experience with sort of going into a fandom and, like, not obviously the same, but it's great. It's wonderful. I'm so glad that it's getting that kind of traction and that it's nice too. I think that, I mean, even though it would be nice if Voltron was able to carry on for, like, a couple of more seasons, I feel like it's also good to know that there's kind of, like, an end point. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it's like, it's going to be nicely bookended. Which is good.
Yeah. And the stories that they're telling are also really important as well. Like, yeah, it's really hard because I've seen the next season already.
I was going to ask you, like, sort of transitioning slowly into TV show of the week. Your TV show of the week is Voltron.
It is. Have
you seen the next season?
I have. So I got the screeners Friday. So that would be, so for people listening back, that would be
a week ago.
Yeah, so we're saying Friday, the 27th of July, I got the episodes. Literally as I was walking through the door after getting back from my day job, they dropped into my inbox. I got given all 13 episodes, and I basically cleared my entire schedule. Anything that I had on, I was like, done. That's it. Nope. Forget it. I'm just gonna watch everything. So I grabbed something to eat really quickly. I grabbed a couple of bottles of water and I literally just sat and watched it straight through. And it was incredible. Once I finished, I went straight to DreamWorks PR because I always tend to do, like, a little tweet review, but I always get it signed off by DreamWorks because usually the embargo is not until, like, the week of release. Sometimes it'll be the day it drops on Netflix and sometimes it'll be a couple of days before. This embargo is up on the 6th of August, which is a couple of days before the show comes out. So the show comes out on the 10th. So in that instance, because it was like, please keep all like online coverage and blah, blah, blah embargoed until the 6th. So I was like, I went to them. I was like, can I tweet about it? Can I like, what can I say this? And I basically gave them the tweet that I was planning on putting out. And they were like, yeah. Oh, this seems fine, but let me just check with everyone and I'll get back to you. And they got back to me and they said, actually, can you hold it until Thursday, which is the day that we're recording this? They were like, can you hold it until the 2nd? Just so that, you know, you're a little bit closer to the embargo date, even though you're not really saying anything. I was like, yeah, sure, fine. Not a problem. So I've been sitting on that tweet for like days, and I put it out today, and essentially what I said in it is a very, very shorthand version of my much longer review that's coming out on Monday, which is a spoiler-free review. But I basically kind of just said, take everything you know, or you think you know, about what's going to happen in season 7 and just throw it out. Because essentially the show is like nothing like anything that they've done before. It was incredible. Like, just in terms of storytelling, it was almost like a masterclass. And yeah, I was really just stunned by the whole thing because mm-hmm. it did a lot of things that I wasn't expecting it to. And it was very, very bold, some of the choices that they made in terms of the narrative structure. It's very, very, very different to how a lot of the seasons have been structured before. And the great thing about Voltron is every season has reinvented itself in some way. So it's always feeling really fresh, really different, and it's always got a really great story to tell. And this one was no exception. And while I still feel like my favorite episodes and some of my standout episodes came in season 6, like if I was to like recommend a one-off episode to anyone, a lot of them would have come out of season 6. There is an arc within this season that as a whole is like the strongest that Voltron has ever been.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so I have to sit on this for another week. I can't say anything specific. My full review, which is over 1,000 words, I wrote it. I've watched the full season like 2 times full, watched all the way through. And then that arc that I was talking about within the show, I watched that as well, a third mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And my full review is over 1,000 words. And there's no spoilers. I, like, allude and tease out a lot of things, but I've not spoiled anything specific, but I still managed to, like, write 1,000 words yeah. about it. And I'm, like, there going, I still don't think it's enough. But I'm really excited for more people to see it so that I can actually talk about it properly, because I think there's some really great things to discuss about this season.
Yes, amazing. It's funny, I'm sitting on the 100 season 5 finale right now, and I still have to write my preview of it. And it's been a while, you know, they've been kind of short on screeners for most of the season. So I'm like, I forget how to do this. And I'm like, how the hell do I say anything without yeah. giving anything away?
I know. It's so tough. Difficult.
Yeah.
Because
you want people to get excited, but you don't want to make false promises. You don't yeah. want to be too, like, hyperbolic about it.
And
you want,
sometimes when you're, like, being a little vague, you yeah. don't want them to, you don't want to, like, read into it something that you're not mm-hmm. actually trying to say.
Yes.
But which
you also don't want them to read into it what you are trying to say.
Yeah, it's this really weird line to have to walk because,
yes.
especially when you read back over it, when you've seen the show, like, in your head, you're like, crap, I'm giving everything away.
Yes.
Because to you, it makes sense. Like, what you've said, what you've put out there makes complete sense because you've got the context. But when you take that context out, it's really hard to piece together. So it's such a really, really, really fine line to walk. But I've had, like, a couple of people read it over, and I'm like, can you tell exactly what I'm saying? And they're like, nope. And I'm like, great. That's excellent. Good. That's exactly what I wanted. So, with the context, it's going to make a lot of sense. Without it, it gives you enough of a teaser as to what's coming up without actually giving anything away. Which, it took me 3 days. No, we're Thursday now, so like 3.5 days, almost four, to write it in full.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I know.
I dread having to do that in one day. Okay, so I guess moving on, I also have a TV show of the week, and that will feed nicely into listener feedback. I was not going to pick the 100 finale, even though I have seen it, and I have so many feelings and thoughts. But actually, I want to talk about End with an E, because that aired, it came out on Netflix a couple of weeks ago, and I watched it, actually, because obviously I just went to Comic-Con 2 weeks ago now. I don't even know. It's the time passes weird at the moment, but I got it all on Netflix. Like, it was wonderful. When I went to LA a few months back, I got Shadowhunters, and I just watched that the entire way over there. And it's amazing when you find a show that you actually like. It's not a chore to keep watching. It's like you want to keep watching. The it makes the journey go by so fast. And I was lucky enough to have that with Shadowhunters on the first trip, and End with an E on the second trip. The first season, obviously, I saw when it came out last year, and I didn't grow up with the original. I didn't read the book. I'm reading the book now, actually, because I'm curious. I didn't watch the original series. Although I did watch one that was very similar to it, but it was like a different girl who also had red hair, and she had a grandmother who lived in a house that burnt. It was very traumatic. Anyway, and with an E season one, I really liked it. I remember having really sort of Anne the character. It gets really dark in season one. Like, I feel like they lean very heavily into the, which is interesting, but also very uncomfortable with the legitimate issues that she has as a result of her very traumatic upbringing and the way she behaves, the way she, like, her temper, her mood swings and stuff like that. It's kind of difficult to watch, and it ended on such an uncomfortable, scary cliffhanger where I was legitimately like, are these people all going to die? You know, like, it was so scary. So I was like a little bit hesitant going into season two, but I watched it all, and it was wonderful. I thought it was so much better than season one. I've heard that, obviously I wouldn't know, but I've heard that it differs a lot from the source material this time, and that is actually a really good thing. Anne has some new friends. She's much more, like, it's not that they erase her trauma, but she's much more tempered now. You can really see what the effect of, you know, being in a good home and having family and having friends and stuff, the positive effect that has on her. And it's really wonderful to see. And plus, I mean, I love that they are adding diversity into the world. I think that that's really great. There's LGBT representation. There is a man of color, you know, he becomes friends with Gilbert, and he comes home with him, and he has a story that is very, very much his own story. And that is, you know, time relevant, or time appropriate without, what is it, the word, time accurate, is that the word, without being, you know, it's really good. I think they made some really good choices, and it was a big improvement on season one. Have you seen it as well?
I have not. It is on my list of shows to watch. I do enjoy the source material. I've read the book. But I've not actually managed to sit down and actually kind of go through it. I think because I've just been so busy with everything else. I will admit, ice hockey took up a ton of, like, emotional capacity for me. Right. The last
It's a lot of episodes of your TV show that you have to sit through. I understand.
Yeah. It's like three a week. Like,
yes, exactly.
But yeah, no, it is on my list. It's actually really high on my list because I've heard so many great things about it. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the next ones that I'm planning on sitting down to watch. I just haven't cleared the space to actually be able to do it. But I'm really looking forward to, because like I said, like, so many people have said so many great things about it as an adaptation, and I'm like, oh, maybe I just really need to, like, figure it out and just, like, be like, okay, I'm gonna clear a couple of hours out and at least get started. Because once I start, like, if I get really into it, I will make the time. The way that you always do when you end up falling in love with the show.
Right, exactly. Well, that's good. I hope you like it. I hope it... And again, I liked the first season enough to keep watching it, but I think it was a weird mix of being a feel-good show and a feel-really uncomfortable show. So I feel like they struck a much better balance in season two. So yeah, I would say stick with it. And it's really fun because I didn't even realize this. I was watching it... one of the new characters who plays Cole is his name. I was like, that boy looks so familiar. And I was like thinking, like, is it? It can't be the kid from Love Actually. He's really old now. And I was like sitting there, where the hell do I know him from? And it turns out it's like he was on The 100. He was his name was Aiden. He was a character in season 3. And it was like, it took me so long to place him. It wasn't like until I think the final episode, I was like,
I love it when that happens, though.
Yes.
When you're like, where do I know you from?
Yes, exactly.
You, like, do I know you in real life?
Yeah. So yes, highly recommend. And moving into listener feedback, we have some tweets. And the first one actually is from Mariah, not Carrie, who has a comment on Anne. She says, I saw Anne with the Knee was coming out about a week beforehand, and I was upset y'all didn't mention it. Had I known you didn't know, Pam, I would have tweeted it sooner. I thought you were too busy with SDCC plans. So Mariah, we would love to hear your thoughts on Anne with the Knee. The next one, I guess you should take that one because it's literally...
Yeah, so it's, I guess, Kafir Shaltiel says, I don't know if you two watch Voltron, but I would love it if you talk about the San Diego Comic-Con news in next week's episode. Well, surprise! No, I'm neither Pam nor Selena, but yes. I hope I covered everything that you wanted to hear about.
Yay. Laura says, I have a musical rec for you all. I just saw Beautiful, the Carole King musical, and I adored it so much. The girl who plays Supergirl is the lead, and she's so good. I really love the story and the music, and highly recommend it. That's so cool. I've heard bad things about Beautiful, so I'm glad that you really liked it, Laura.
Yeah, I had also not heard particularly favorable things, but yeah, it's kind of one of the things that where it's like, you know what? Some things just aren't for everyone. Mm-hmm. And what works for some people won't work for others. And that's not a bad thing. Like, yeah. So.
True.
Yeah. I like this next one.
Yes.
This next one makes me very happy. Betty Anderson said, just discovered that Merlin is back on Swedish Netflix. I know what I'm doing tonight. This would be a great time to continue the rewatch.
Yeah, I can't read suddenly. I don't know. Yes, Betty, you are correct. We've had to put that on the back burner because we've been so incredibly busy. But we were talking at Comic-Con. Me and Pam had like a little sit down about the show and our priorities, and we were like, yeah, we really need to prioritize Merlin because that's the thing, we both really want to as well. It's just about finding the time to do it. We think we found a way to do it, so stay tuned, and then like by the time you watch it all, then you can go back and start from the beginning with us.
Amazing, because I actually, funnily enough, the other day I kind of was like, oh, what can I put on in the background that like I've seen like a million times, but like I know that I enjoy, and it'll be really nice to like just have to keep me company while I'm like doing some writing. Yes. Yeah. And I actually threw on the first couple of episodes of Merlin. Oh. That's what I put on. And oh my gosh, going back to that first episode where Arthur and Merlin first meet, that yeah. whole scene, I forgot how absolutely fantastic that scene is and how much I loved it. Like, just that entire feeling from the first season. And just the whole show. I love that whole show anyway. But going back and watching those first couple of episodes, like, I was like, oh no. Like, in the middle, like, my hand stopped on the keyboard, kind of, like, half-watching the TV, going, oh no, danger, danger.
No,
it's I'm getting sucked back in.
it is such a life suck, that show. Like, it's terrible. Like, I think as well, like, we sort of realized we did the first couple of episodes, like, 3 or 4 episodes, and we were like, this is going to take over our existence. Like, also because... I don't know if you felt this way as well, but I was. It had been a while since I rewatched the first episodes, and then we went back and did them. They're really good.
Yeah,
I was like, wait, I remember this being kind of not this good.
Yeah,
you know, I loved Merlin, like, but it was genuinely good.
Yeah, in hindsight, from like where the show got to in its later seasons, like looking back in hindsight, without having actually gone back to rewatch the episodes, had somehow categorized it in my head as being a little, like, wooden and a bit overly cheesy.
Yeah.
And I don't know why.
It was just really good. Yeah.
Because then I went back and actually watched it and was like, oh, no, forgot how amazing, like, it literally was like that. Like, the second that Arthur and Merlin meet and I'm like, it felt like a gut punch of being like, oh my god, like,
wow,
I feel
doing something here.
Yeah, yeah. I feel exactly how I felt the first time I watched it. And it's so hard with a show to get that feeling a second time.
Yeah.
And I just, like, I got it. And that's when I realized I was in danger.
Same. Yeah. But yeah, no, stay tuned. Watch the space, Betty. We're working on something. We also have a couple of emails. The first one is from Elizabeth, who says, hey, ladies, so I recently went to see Harry Styles in concert, and I remember when his album first came out, you were both talking about how much you loved it. He did an amazing job, and it was awesome to see him and hear his music live. I was wondering what concerts you've been to and what were your favorites. Thanks so much, and keep up the great work. Oh my God, poor Pam is missing this question. She's been waiting her whole life for this question. We might have to repeat this email next week.
Probably.
Tanya, what concerts have you been to?
So the only very recent concert that I've been to was in April. I took a friend of mine, Lindsay, to see the Bare Naked Ladies for the first time.
Oh, cool.
And she had a great time, because I don't know, like, what she was expecting, because they have a lot of fun with their shows. They're kind of a band that just have fun on stage, and just, they have so much buy-in from their audience, and they have so many, like, traditions with, like, the songs that they sing and how the audience interacts with them, that it's such a unique experience going to see them. And taking someone for the first time is always really, really fun, because they expect you to, like, get involved in singing the songs with them. Because you've got, like, cues for when you're supposed to join in on certain things. And so that was really fun, was to take her there. I've seen them, I'm in the double digits now. I think I've seen them about 15 or 16 times live. Whenever they come over to the UK, I make a point of seeing them at least once. If I can manage to make it to more than one concert while they're in the UK, I do. Because it just... for a couple of hours, it's just the perfect escape, and I absolutely love it.
That is awesome. I have to admit, I'm not a huge concert person. It's like a crowd thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's really hard for me to get into it. And even, like, just, like, people that stand around being like, like, I don't like it. But I do go to a couple of some concerts. I think some of the best ones that I've been to, I went to an Imagine Dragons concert a couple of years ago. That was amazing. They came to Copenhagen. I love Imagine Dragons. My brother was a huge fan, so we went together and he had a blast. And I also had a medium good time. And
I love that, a medium good time.
Yes. And then actually, like, years and years ago, I went to a concert, a small, tiny concert with Kate Vogel, who is an artist. You know, she came out of One Tree Hill, of all things. And I just love her music so much. She's, like, one of my favorite artists. She continues to be one of my favorite singer-songwriters. And her music is just wonderful.
Yeah.
And so I got to see her in London, and she was every bit as wonderful as you would expect. And I went with two of my friends, who I knew, actually, from two different things. So they got to meet for the first time, and one of them was like not a fan, and the other one was like a massive fan. So it was a little weird, but I liked the concert experience itself.
Yeah, I out of like left field, like so Bare Naked Ladies is fairly, even though they have their own little spiel that they do within their concerts, they're still fairly like traditional in a concert sense. The other concert that I've been to that has been like my favorite. It's probably Distant Worlds, which is it's a Final Fantasy themed orchestral concert, and they pair it with like really cool visuals, and they get a lot of the people like local orchestras and everything and philharmonics and stuff involved in doing them, and they're so good. They're incredible. If it ever comes near you and you're into orchestral music, go and see it. It's such a great time. And it's so different. It's very, very interesting how they pull them all together. And it's a lot of fun, especially if you go with other people, because you tend to have a lot of... It's this weird mix of fandom and like almost classical music. Because you get a lot of cosplayers going as well, because it's obviously based on the game series. And it's just a really unique experience, and it's so much fun. Like, I cannot recommend it enough. If that's your thing, it's just this really great intersection of music and like, video game fandom that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you want to get the final email from Laura?
Yeah, so Laura sent an email that says, "Hi ladies, I feel like it has been so long since I've written in. I went to several book conventions at the end of May and since then have been reading all the books. I've also been rewatching a lot of shows and wanted to share some recs with you. I've been reading several royal themed books and wanted to tell you about them. There is a book called Rule that is due out this fall and is basically a mix between Pretty Little Liars and Three Dark Crowns. I really loved this book and flew through it and now have to wait a year for book two, but it is such a fun read. Also, book three in the Three Dark Crowns series comes out this September, and the series is about a group of triplets that at age 16 have to kill each other to see who gets the throne. They all have different magic iffiness and is a super dark book, but super good. If you love Game of Thrones and strong female characters, you should def check out this book. I also finished reading two summer reads called Save the Date and The Unexpected Everything by Morgan Matheson. Save the Date takes place over the lead character's older sister's wedding, and the wedding planner quits, so much hijinks occur, and I adored it. I also read her other book, The Unexpected Everything, where we follow Andy, whose summer is turned on her head when her dad's job as a congressman is caught in a scandal, and she spends the summer walking a dog and meets a cute boy who just happens to be a writer and is quite cute. I'm also watching Greek and loving my rewatch so much. I really need to catch up on The 100 and my other CW shows and wanted to send you so many book recs."
Awesome. That's a really good list. Like, speaking of summer reads, there's some really fun ones.
Yeah.
I'm
interested in Rule. That one that's like a mix between Pretty Little Liars and Three Dark Crowns. I haven't read Three Dark Crowns, but I kind of really love the absurdity of Pretty Little Liars, so...
Yes.
Color me intrigued, I should say.
Yeah, I was going to say, I am so happy that Laura's rewatching Greek, because I feel like that's kind of like a show for our time. You know,
yeah.
We need more shows like Greek. Greek is so sweet and unhurtful and safe, and I really enjoy it. So that's awesome. Thank you so much, Laura, and everyone else who wrote in. If you guys are interested listening, if you want to give us any feedback or any comments on anything we talked about, any suggestions for what we should read or watch or listen to next, you can do that by emailing us hype@hypeable.com. And you can tweet us at Hypeable Hype. And thank you so much, Danya, for joining us.
Yay! Okay. I had a lot of fun. It was really cathartic to actually be able to just talk through my Voltron fan experience. Because I do jump in and out of like other Voltron-specific podcasts. Particularly, like, there's another one called Let's Voltron, which I'll be back on again soon, but we usually have like a really specific niche topic and everyone already kind of either knows of you or has seen you around, so you don't really get that chance to really talk through stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so this was really nice. So thank you for asking me to come on.
Of course. Hopefully we can have you back at some point that is like not as long of a time.
You
know what I was trying to say. Yes. Yeah.
So you can follow me on Twitter, which is probably where I'm most active, which is at @virtual_don. So that's @virtual_don. But otherwise, my most active place otherwise is basically writing articles on Hyperbole. So your best bet is to hit me up on Twitter.
Okay, and thank you so much to everyone for listening, and we'll see you back here next week for episode 195. Bye, everyone!
Bye!